You were called to make the world brighter, to run on the front lines, to cast vision where it had not yet landed. You are not gifted to be a random burst of energy, but a consistent force that enables the world to hear beauty, see potential, and write stories in a way that points the world to Jesus. Provoke and inspire. Welcome to the Provoke and Inspire podcast. I'm even more excited than I usually am because we have all four of us back in the fold together again.
Isn't that great?
Woo!
Miracle.
Back in the fold.
Back in the fold. What does that expression even mean? Is that an agrarian expression? Is that some sort of like shirt?
I think it's like an Australian Kanga pouch kind of expression. Oh, back in the fold, mate!
Back in the goop would be more accurate.
Yet we're in very different countries all around the world, but we are back together online.
In 2018, isn't this really what being together is?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that is the topic today.
Who needs face-to-face, real, in-person hangs anyway?
It's too messy. Plus, I can't wear my
robe. Ben doesn't even let us turn our cameras on anymore.
No. It doesn't even want to look at us.
Yeah.
All right. This is the Provoke and Inspire podcast. My name is Ben Pierce. I'm in Minneapolis. David is actually in Albania. I don't know where in Albania.
He's trying to sell Chad's books in Albania.
Yeah. Thanks, David. Yeah. How's it going?
I don't really know where I am in Albania. I just know we have a show in about 3 hours. That's all I know.
Yeah. Yep. They're on tour in Albania. He's going town to town with a cart trying to, you know, offload 10,000 ribs. Yep. It's difficult.
It is.
He's mostly at this point only been able to trade them for various commodities and goods like spices.
Hey, that's better than I've been able to do.
I got some Cinnabuns for one of your books.
Nice.
Cinnabuns. Wasn't that Luke's nickname in high school?
Cinnabuns.
Oh, that brought back memories. Cinnabuns.
Yes, it did.
Yes.
Yep.
So anyway, old Cinnabuns is in Poland, I think, right?
Yes, I am. Good old Poland.
So, Luke, will I see you in Germany this weekend? Probably not, huh?
No, I plan
to
not
Germany?
Be there when you're there.
Yeah. I see. Yeah.
I am going there. I don't know if we're crossing paths, but I am going there midweek.
I leave on Tuesday night, so maybe I'll see you. I'll probably try to leave right before you get there, though, just so it's not awkward for us.
For all of those listening, this is the podcast where we just get on and share each other's schedules.
According to iCal.
So what are you doing on Tuesday? Anyway, this is the Provoke and Inspire podcast, calling followers of Jesus to radical faith in secular culture. It's great for us to be together. I know it's exciting for me because we've been spread around the globe as usual, but very busy doing various things. I was on tour in Albania. I'm back home. I'm having child number two, so
yeah,
right
now.
Rock and roll's got to give way. No, Courtney's on her way to the hospital, and
that's not cool.
At least your priorities are proper.
That's just
that's
not cool.
That's how devoted I am.
You're doing a podcast when your wife's giving birth. That's uncool.
But it'll make for a great random story.
Yeah, that's
right?
True.
So anyway, that is the heart and purpose of this podcast. We did a few road reports while we were in Albania. David's still in Albania. We'll continue to do those when I'm on the road.
Wow.
David,
All right.
I'm going to take over at this point.
That's what he thinks. Subversion. That's what he thinks he's going to do. He doesn't even know what he's saying.
I don't.
But that is
anyway,
that's a Pierce quality right there.
It is, but here's the
usually
thing.
It
David
works out.
Has increasingly, you guys notice that David increasingly has slipped in these pre-random stories.
Yeah.
Eventually,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just going to be only David's randomness.
Yeah.
3 minutes of Luke muttering something, Chad going on a tangent, and then me closing out the show.
Provoke and random stories.
So, David, before you slip in another pre-random story, how about you actually give us the actual random story? I don't have the sound bites, so it's going to have to be Luke introducing it with
David's random story.
So during this festive season, I thought, you know, I would go with Jody and Aaron, and actually had my mother, and Jody had her mother, and then we were with Aaron and my son and Jennifer and their three kids, which are my grandkids.
What? Carry on.
So anyway, so we thought we would go and look at the lights. I don't know why, but that's what Jody and Jen, and they wanted to do. But there was no room for Aaron and I in the children van, so Aaron and I were following behind in our own car while they were all in the other van looking at the lights, and then you have to go to this thing and listen to this music. Aaron and I are sitting there, and just, you know, it said peace on earth, and it had like a major...
A manger?
And it was had all this kind of stuff.
This is ridiculous.
And then... So, but then all of a sudden this guy, he's like, comes out of that house, and it's all about love and all that. He comes out of this house, he starts pounding on my window, and he's like really mad. And he's like one of those guys, you know, with a banjo or something. And he's like yelling at me.
One of those guys with a banjo.
He's like yelling at me because I'm blocking this. I'm like blocking the driveway of this house that there was nobody at. And he's like, really? And Aaron's going, just drive. And he's like pounding on the window. I was attacked at a Christmas delight thing. So then I'm thinking, I was a little traumatized because I was just going out to do the festive thing with the lights and the grandkids and all that. So I thought, okay. So then I go out to dinner and I'm with Jody.
How long is this?
Am I done? Should I stop?
No. Keep going.
So Jody's there, and then my mother. And then the waitress goes, "What do you ladies want to eat?" I'm like, "Come on!"
I'm getting so tired of this.
I don't know if I got to quit working out or if I can't wear those black jeans anymore. But it's getting really old.
Yeah, you got to lay off that dopamine.
And so then I answered really with a really like.
Yeah, okay.
You're done.
All right. David's random story, the gender confusion hour. Oh, anyway, we'll try to transition from there. This is clearly, it's almost like preseason form. We're rusty, we're looser than usual, and it's ridiculous. So anyway, trying to move on, trying to rein this thing back in as I previously did and failed. We're going to now move on to the part of the podcast where we try to get a little bit more serious. But before we do, I do want to mention something that we talk about every once in a while. It's called IGSOL. It's called I Give So Others Live. This is your way of participating in the mission and vision of Come and Live of this podcast to share our perspective with the world. This idea that you can use, specifically as we started, you can use your art and music to preach the gospel, to be bold for Jesus outside of the church. But really, this podcast has morphed into something more general, as for those who have been listening will know. But also just the mission and vision of Come and Live to support, to encourage, to train, to send out more artists, because we really do believe that God has uniquely equipped artists to make a difference in the world using the platform they've been given to share the gospel. So we can't do this without you. If you feel inspired by this vision, inspired by this mission, you can be part of that through IGSOL. It's basically a way to financially support what we're doing. Chad had a vision a long time ago that there would be just a huge community of people that would contribute, you know, to this idea of many small gifts make a big difference. And so if there's something, no matter what it is, that you feel like you can give, that is a way of putting your weight behind and being a partner with us as we try to fulfill this mission of over 100 artists preaching to over a million people annually. So comeandlive.com/IGSOL, IGSOL, to really get behind what we are doing. Housekeeping aside, moving along, we are now going to do the... Chad, I don't have the soundbite, so do the revolutionary recap.
Revolutionary recap.
I think you can go lower. Come on, give me a lower one.
Revolutionary recap.
That just got a little weirder, but anyway. So the thing I'm going to talk about today is kind of a unique challenge. And it's, you know, our heart is to reach global youth. Our heart is to be relevant in reaching the real people outside of the church, the secular world. We're not a church planting organization. We are part of the church. We are the church. We work with local churches all over the world. But sometimes you face the unique challenge that you're working in a particular context, trying to reach people outside of the church and the clubs, the bars, on the streets, and the cafes. But for whatever reason, the local church that is around you, that is with you, they don't really get it. They aren't behind it for whatever reason, or they just don't seem to understand you or the category of people that you're trying to reach. And so, Luke, how about you kick us off here? And what do you do when you find yourself in that position? You have this, God's put this burden in your heart to reach people. You want to do things. You want to have your church behind you, but they just don't seem to get it. They seem to be out of touch with the culture and just don't seem to understand even the vision or the mission that you have.
Well, I really believe in church unity, and I love seeing God do amazing things in the community, in the body of Christ, as we come together, as we come with our differences and different ages, different backgrounds and stuff, and work together for the kingdom. And so I always make it plan A to find ways to communicate as clearly as I can what it is we're doing, to be patient in doing that, in answering questions or helping people understand when they're afraid or cautious about what we're doing, and having a humble and servant attitude about it. So being part of the church, really, really saying, you know, I want to be part of this. How can I serve? What can I do? And just having that kind of attitude, it helps to disarm the others in the church who may feel like you're doing something weird or like they don't get what you're doing. So I think a lot of good communication is important, and not coming across like you're just trying to do your own thing and you don't really care. And I think sometimes we jump too quickly to the conclusion that the church doesn't get what we do, and we don't give them the chance. And I think we need to let the fruit speak. So what we're doing, and showing people the fruit of what we're doing, instead of saying, "Oh, they don't understand," and not giving them a chance to realize what God's doing. And so that's what I think.
So one time I was trying to. There's a pastor that came visit me in Amsterdam, and he wanted to see what we were doing. So I introduced him to my band, and then they left, and he said, "Wow, the guys you reach are really heavy." So he thought the band was actually the guys with the, you know, the that we were reaching.
Yeah, yeah, your outreach.
Yeah, and so I just
let him go with that, right?
Yeah, I just went with it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's good.
But
that's the way.
But so they, you know, sometimes people don't get it, but part of it is I understand why they don't get it. You know, and so I think it's about having, like Luke was saying, I think we need to have a humble heart, and I've seen that some of the most conservative churches become our biggest supporters when they really get to see what we're doing, and if I don't come in, you know, in an arrogant way and in a humble way, you know, and understand, yeah, I get why you might not understand this, but give them a chance to see the fruit of what you're doing, and often they'll be our biggest supporters.
Right.
The Luke, I love the point where fruit is really hard to argue with. You know, like as artists consider the possibility of first time in a specific city or location or whatever, and no church has shown any support. That over time, I mean, even though it's maybe slightly different analogy, but when Come and Live started very early on, churches, I think that there's a natural sort of skepticism that churches and probably people in general hold towards anytime something's fresh and it's maybe a little out of the box, and so you do have to allow for the fruit to shine and to give grace to people and to just keep working towards and inviting God to bring the right partners. And so it's it's that idea of fruit shining forth connects.
Also, I feel like often I see people like early on where they've just started expecting everybody to get behind them. And it seems like sometimes people spend more time trying to get everybody to like what they do or agree with what they do, rather than actually doing it. And that's the thing about realizing that the fruit speaks loud, is sometimes you just need to put your head down and get on with what God's called you to do. Being respectful to the church and everything, but just getting on with it and then letting the fruit speak for itself and then coming and hoping people will get behind you and support it. So sometimes you need to do a bit of the action first so that people can understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think humility, like I think what we all keep saying, humility is a huge part of this is that, you know, this is a cyclical thing, and also maybe understanding that, you know, you know, typically I think we're talking to a younger demographic in terms of who would struggle with this. But you know, there can be a real arrogance with youth and knowing that, you know, you're not the first one to probably have some radical idea. There's probably people in the church that have done incredible things that God has used, and to know that ultimately, like you guys said, what will connect you is the fruit and kind of paying your dues in that sense. And we talk a lot about that on the podcast. I think the challenge in all of this, though, is there are times, and I have experienced where church culture has become unhealthy, and it has become inward, and it has become about looking a certain way, talking a certain way. And so, you know, there is a sense where you're not accepted, or your vision is not accepted because it doesn't fit maybe into the paradigms or the boxes that churches understand. And so there is a challenge there. And I think, you know, probably proactively serving, also being willing to show that you're not too cool to serve the church in a way that they understand, and that you're, that's part of your commitment. And then, like you said, Luke, getting on with it, and not in a sort of, you know, critical spirit, you know, talking to anyone outside of it that will listen to you and explaining how the church won't get behind you, but just faithfully doing the mission that God's called you to do. There's not an arrogance in that, right? And just saying, well, I'm going to serve the church, I'm going to love the church, but I'm also going to do what I feel God has called me to do, and then continue to communicate the fruit in a way that they understand. And then in time, like you said, David, you see this change, right? You there's been these transformations where, like, we, you know, I'll speak somewhere, and, you know, some of the most amazing prayer warriors, craziest cool supporters are these, you know, there'll be these, this old women will come up to me and be like, you know, I love what you guys are doing with No Longer Music. And, you know, I don't always totally get it, but I know God's using you, and I'm praying for you every day. And so I think it's cool. We often talk about that. Like, what other thing can bring people together like Jesus? You know, what other, you know, it's not some cultural club that's just people, you know, they gather together based on preferences. They're ultimately and should be unified by a desire to love God and reach people. And that language transcends methodology in the end.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, one time I was speaking at this church, and after I finished, this one elderly lady came up to me afterwards, and she goes, I learned something with you today. And I was like, what's that? And she goes, never judge a sausage by its skin.
Nice.
Well, that might have to be the title of the podcast and my next t-shirt idea.
Yeah. There you go.
So let that be a lesson to all of you out there. You never judge a sausage by its skin. Boy, Chad would have gotten nowhere if he had not gotten out of the burden of that expression. Am I wrong?
That's so true. I mean, the closest thing I have is speaking at a church, and a gentleman came up to me at the end, and he said, hey, you know, I just want to let you know that I haven't learned anything from what you shared, but I do like how you talk.
See, that's all how I feel, too.
I got to admit, Chad, your speaking is best when on mute. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't... But Luke's is better.
Like,
that's classic. That's
Yeah.
I didn't learn anything, but I like the way you talk.
You know, I guess in the end of the day, to not... You also just try not to get discouraged, because I think we've all also had, you know, in all seriousness, we've all also had the story of, you know, you're pouring yourself out there and, you know, I'll be like playing a show. And we've often joked about this on the podcast, and, you know, we're doing our best and sincerely preaching and trying to tell people about Jesus. And then you got this, you know, someone from the church, the local church, will come up to you and be like, you know, I can't believe you play those satanic guitars. And that's discouraging.
That's discouraging.
So obviously that is a bit frustrating, but I think that tends to be the rare experience, and not allowing that to stop you or discourage you. And in the end of the day, that you're always going to deal, there's going to be religious people, right? I mean, that's just, there was for Jesus. There were people that didn't understand him. But you don't also get a sense that it allowed, of course, he's the Son of God. He didn't develop a critical spirit, but he modeled for us to not become cynical and continue to have compassion, and I think that's kind of the key, right? Stay faithful and be compassionate, even for those that don't understand. Because, like you said, David, in the beginning, perspective is a gift, right? Not even knowing what you know, even seeing what you see, is a gift. You know, I don't deserve to have had the experiences that I've had, and to see God move in the way I have. Even the perspective that comes from that is a gift. That's something that I haven't earned, and so I feel very grateful And I want to be a good steward of that privilege. So anyhow, moving along, that was the revolutionary recap. Maybe I'll put in the soundbite later. Maybe I'll just copy and paste Chad's, the higher pitched one. I thought that was the better of the two.
I do think it was pretty fantastic. If I don't, never mind.
If you do say so yourself, basically.
Yeah.
Moving along, we are now going to get into the meat, the main topic du jour, if you will. We have sort of put together accidentally this series, and it all kind of looks at calling. It looks at what God wants us to do. You know, we had a podcast a few weeks back called Is Calling Even a Thing? And we looked at the idea, does God uniquely appoint you for things, and some of the ways you should properly look at that. We also talked when we looked at Billy Graham's life and this quote of his where he said he'd really wish he'd spent more time just with God and meditating on who God is and with his family. You know, we've talked about busyness and what our priority should be and how we should spend our time in our lives. And so to kind of round that out, I want to talk about the idea of our vocation, the thing that we do with our lives and our identities. Because I think this is a really critical topic, and actually what made me think about this, what brought this to the front of my mind is kind of my own journey as it relates to this. Because I think artists especially can be very, if you're privileged enough to use art and music as a vocation in your life, it can be very integrated into your identity. And it can be very hard to not let that become imbalanced, to let it become an unhealthy thing. And so for me personally, I've been involved with No Longer Music, the band, for 12 years now. So I've, you know, coming straight out of university, I went on my first tour, and it's basically, I've never stopped. It's been part of who I've developed into. My role within the band has very much grown to a much larger creative role in terms of developing the show, writing the songs, all that type of thing. So it's very much a part of what I do on a day-to-day basis. And about 3 years ago, I know exactly when, about 2.5 years ago, I had my first son, my only son, and it really changed things, obviously. Prior to that, my wife, Courtney, she was on tour with me for many, many years, 6 years to be exact. She came along on every tour, very brave woman, and was able to do all that. But obviously, when we had kids, things changed, and it began this process for me of really separating or being aware of my identity as it related to being in No Longer Music and having God kind of really work on that part of my life and maybe expose some things in me that I had inadvertently started to develop in me about how closely my identity was tied up in the band and being on tour. And so it really began this process of having to kind of separate that. There were many times over the last few years, including right now, where the band goes on and I'm not part of it. I mean, literally in 2 hours, No Longer Music will play a show, something that I have literally poured my life into, blood, sweat, and tears, and it will completely function beginning to end without me. And if I'm honest, this was a struggle for a while, and it was really something that I had to bring to God. And I wrestled with because I clearly felt that he had called me into it, that he had called me to develop it, that he had called me to pour myself into it. And then all of a sudden, I felt like he asked me to let go of it in a way. And I'm still very much involved, of course, but it's been a real process for me. And so what I want to talk about, what I want to open it up to you guys is this whole idea. God clearly calls us to do specific things. He's created us for good works in advance. He's uniquely wired us, uniquely gifted us. I think he wants us not to just do a million things poorly, but to really pour ourselves into specific things. But how do we do that without becoming wrapped up in it? How do we do that without becoming professional? And that becomes the whole point. How do we know when things have become imbalanced in that way? What do you guys think?
Well, for me, it was, when I got serious about my relationship with God and the way that God has wired me, I was very concerned about what was I going to do? You know, what was I going to do for God? And to show God I was serious, I did this this Bible school, but no one would give me any responsibility. It was really irritating to me. And I thought, when we do this big, outreach in Amsterdam, then everyone will see, you know, my potential, and I'll be released by my leaders. And they said I couldn't go on this outreach. And I can remember I left this little bungalow I was staying in at the edge of the forest in Holland. And it was a cold, rainy night. And I just went out into the forest, and I literally just laid on the – I just stumbled and fell in the mud. And I just said, okay, Jesus, I don't care anymore. You know, I don't want to – I don't care about what I do. I just want to know you more. And then I would just go on these long walks in the forest and just seek God. And for me, that was really critical. And I need to always come back to that, that it's out of balance when knowing God becomes not the most important thing in my life. If doing things for God or whatever task he's given me to do becomes the thing, then I'm out of balance. And it needs to always be knowing God is the most important thing to me, and that out of that, then I do things that he's put me on this planet to do. But for me, that's the way I can tell if I'm out of balance.
Mm. I agree, and I think that anybody who's done or doing something significant with their lives will be able to identify with your story, Ben, and what you were sharing there as well, because it's natural when we really give ourselves to something to start feeling that way, and if we're not always watching our hearts, and it'll happen anyway, we're going to start connecting our identities to it. And like what David's saying there is being able to have an open hand with it so that we're able to remember where that gift comes from and why we're doing it and what really matters. And I think that God, he calls us to be open-handed in a sense of always willing to let go. So he gives us something to do, or he gives us a gifting. But like David was saying, the most important thing is who we are in him and our relationship with him. So in a sense, he calls us to follow him with this, with a surrender and with an open hand. And that also means it's not just a concept or just a set of like a mindset you have, but it's actually something that will happen at times in our lives where God will actually call us away from things or take things away from us or lead us through situations where we have to let go. And I see him doing that in the Bible. I see him doing it in my own life and in your example and David's too. It's like this is a process that is naturally part of following God. He will at times call us away or challenge us or just give us times where things are different and we have to let go of things. And it's an important part of growing and learning. And I think that's a key part of knowing how to serve him and yet have our identities in him and have him as the most precious thing rather than what we do for him.
Yeah, there's something really dangerous and unfortunate about what seems to happen when ministry does grow, and that's that we receive far more recognition from man. And if we're not careful, that recognition can quickly spin into a theology of works and of no longer of grace, but of Yeah, that's right. I am doing something really good. And I think in my own sort of, especially the midst of the 1,000 risks journey, there was a point where people were beginning to notice a little more what God was doing in my life through that season. And I began, I was on a flight to Australia, 2015, and it was like, I guess 2 a.m. my time. And I just felt like God very clearly challenged me and said, you are listening to the voice of man way more than my own, and you need to repent. And so I just found myself crying, confessing, admitting the fact that, that it was a struggle and sometimes still is a struggle because, when God first calls us, for most of us anyway, it was on such a sort of humble level that most people didn't even know we existed, let alone that God was doing something through us. And so I think we just have to keep bringing to him, like, God, this is I am human, and I do have this capacity and tendency towards making this about what I do for you rather than what you do through me. And so as I just continue to confess that and admit it and be honest about it, I think it gives God way more room in which to work and disassemble, you know, any of the possibility, especially areas where I would go wrong in this way.
And I don't know if it was like this for you, Ben, but in that process you described, because it was like this for me, often a question that comes up that I feel like is an important one is, what would I look like, what would my life look like if I didn't have that particular thing that has become a big part of what I spend my time on? And of course, it's really important and it's something that, you know, I believe God's called me to. But if he was to take it away, what would my life look like? Who would I be? And I feel like that's a really important question to ask when it comes to like being open-handed before God. God, whatever you want and you're more important, is to be able to ask that question and to honestly look at it and say, okay, who would I be if I didn't have that? That doesn't define me. So what would my life look like? If you're not in NLM anymore, for example, what would that look like? What would your life be like?
Yeah, I think it's that for sure. And I think it's for me, I think it's been a process of ruthlessly examining where I'm getting my life from, you know, what is the motivation behind the things I do, you know? And so as I had these seasons and these moments where I had to step out, and not be the guy, not be, you know, in NLM the way I was, it really brought to the forefront, where is it that I'm getting my value? Where is it? What is it that is making me feel important or useful or significant? I don't know if I've shared this before, but probably the hardest example of this for me that happened was, it was early on, and this was not even while I had kids. It was funny. We were on tour, and the plan had been that we would go, the core team would go to Turkey with none of the stuff. You know, we'd go to Turkey, and a different team would take all of the, you know, our big awesome stage and all of our cool gear, and would take that and do this tour of Poland. And in fact, I think Luke, you were even on that tour.
It was my fault, right?
Yeah, it was your fault. So that's what I'm getting at. You know, as I've right. Well, I was lying on the Davenport of analysis.
It's interesting that you want to deal with this on the podcast.
That's what this all boils down to.
We could talk about it outside.
It's the height of passive aggressive. You know, I didn't want to bring this up. I'm going to bring this up in front of hundreds and thousands of people.
Yeah, so, it is.
And what happened was, so this tour gets set in motion. It's awesome. Like, divide and conquer. Perfect plan. Sounds great. Well, the Turkey tour gets canceled. And so here we are, you know, something I pour my blood, sweat, and tears into. And we literally just had to sit in Kyrgyz, our international center, while you guys went on tour and had this awesome tour. You know, and night after night, all these people are coming, and here I am trying to be all noble about it. But if I'm honest, I'm like, God, what the heck? You know, I'm so frustrated because, I mean, you put yourself in my position. You know, you put so much into this, and then you're just sitting there, you know, going, oh, awesome. Okay, yeah, we'll just sit here. But it was the beginning of a really, really important process for me, and that was, God, what? Why am I doing this? What's the point of all this? Where am I really doing this for you, or am I doing this because it defines who I am? And Luke, like you said, what would it look like if I didn't have this? And wanting then, you know, going on a long journey of saying, God, I want to get to the point. I want to get to the place where it doesn't matter what I do. Like, and I know, you know, on this side of eternity, I don't know if we'll ever get that confident, that good, where we can detach ourselves that completely. But that's kind of the goal, right? Like, God, if it was just you and me, and I just had some simple job to do, that should be enough. And that's the goal. And that's where I want to be. It's been a difficult journey, and it's ongoing, and but I can say honestly though, I'm far better now than I was. You know, God has really done a work in me, and I feel a lot stronger, and I feel a lot more free to just say, okay, God, whatever you want for whatever season I'm in, it's cool. Because I trust you, and that's what it really comes down to, doesn't it? It's just trusting that God is good.
But also, isn't it, Ben, that you can put yourself in a box, you know, and it's like, I do this, and you end up limiting, you know, your what you do so much because God doesn't put you in that box. And I'm just saying, I think about all the things I've been able to experience because I was allowing to say, I don't define myself. This is what I do. Because then that just keeps me from being, you know, who knows what things God wants to use me in or have me do. But because I limit myself in such a narrow way, that's what my life is like.
Yeah,
Again, that's totally to your point. That's why I said it's about trusting God, right? Because I don't think God is just cruel. Like, Ben loves this thing, but I'm going to just take it away and just kind of make him suffer for a while because I need him to know that it's not about him. I actually don't think God works that way. I think he's like, God is bigger than that. He doesn't, you know, and we go, well, I can only see myself. If I don't do this role, what else will I do? And God is just saying, just right. Trust me. I got it. And I'm also not so freaked out by your circumstances. It's like, I know you're going to have a family. I know that life's going to change. I'm not like, oh, well, I didn't really want that, but I'll guess I'll let him do plan C. God's not like that. He has a plan, and it's just about trusting him in each of the seasons that come up.
And that's true. Like, I have a friend who often struggles with, like, when he has to do something that's not what he considers his main calling, or where he doesn't get to do, you know, what he thinks he's supposed to do and that kind of thing. And he often will say, like, oh, it's character building. But I think you're right. It's sometimes we can get stuck in this trap where we're going, where we think that, well, uh-huh. things happen, so it's character building. But actually, it's because God just doesn't see stuff the same way we do. And maybe the thing that we think so precious is not the way he sees it. There's so much more to you know, the bigger perspective of how he sees things, both in ministry and in life in general. And I think you're... example of the time you're at now with family brings that real close. Of course, I'm at that same time of just realizing that God's calling on my life includes so much more than some of those projects that when I started off as a young single guy were so precious, so important, and realizing there's so much more to life and are part of God's calling as well into, you know, who he's called me to be and how I can be a blessing to the world around me, how I can be a blessing to my family and the things we learn in that. And then in ministry as well, it broadens out what we do, which is, I think, David's point there as well, that there's, you know, we shouldn't limit what we do ministry-wise. There's so much more to what God can do through us.
Yeah, we have such a limited perspective, which is your point, Luke. And when I was working at the record label, there was a season where I thought, this is as good as it gets. I have found my calling, my place, my purpose. I'm making great money. It's all working out. And I could never have imagined that God actually had something more fruitful and stronger, more profound for my life, a better story than where I was, simply because my perspective wasn't his. So I really... yeah, relate with that.
Yeah,
that point.
You're never going to go wrong in your life, I think, if you just lay your dreams down, you know, and say,
yeah,
you know, I want to serve you, and yeah, I really love what you're having me do now, but I just want to give it up in a second if you have something else you want me to do, or you know, you can trust them in the seasons of your life. My experience has been that I would have so missed out if I would have just said, no, I only do these certain things. You know, I think it's such a mistake, and I've seen so many people live their lives that way, and I think they've missed out on a lot because of it.
So I kind of had just to bullet point some lists of how do you know when things have gotten out of balance. I mean, before I say that, I really think it's important to emphasize this is not just for vocational missionaries or people working in the church. All of us are very driven by what we do. So whether it's our work, whether it's our families, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, some volunteer stuff we do, or we're driven by that. And it's very easy for us to say, you know, I'm going to put all of my identity in my work, or I'm going to put all of my identity in my family. You know, that's what it's going to all be about. And I think in all of this, this is something that applies to everyone, which is that God wants you to trust him. God wants you to put your identity in him so that your peace, so your satisfaction, so your joy transcends circumstances, so that it's not, because nothing we have is guaranteed to us. And God might ask us to do something different, or a job might end, or something will, you know, we can't rely on these circumstances necessarily, but I think God wants us to have a resilience that comes, a resiliency that comes from being dependent on him and have our identities firmly in who he is. And then I think we can loosely go and with peace go from season to season, because that's ultimately where our hope comes from. So again, I think this applies to everyone, but here are a few things I think that, you know, things are out of balance. You know, I think if God asks you to change or step out or let something go and it just causes a crisis in our life, you know, that when something just changes and it throws everything off, that's probably a sign that you've been holding on too tightly to something that you're doing as your identity. I think one is you won't embrace the next seasons of your life, right? You're in the state of arrested development. So maybe you delay family, or you delay an obvious move you need to make, or you delay something, and you see people like that. I think we all know people like that, because they've got to be the band guy. And so they can't get married, or they can't have kids, or they can't move on to this season of their life, because that's who they are, and it would ruin that. I think another one is it becomes all about your skills, abilities, interests, methods, and strategies, right? Because if your identity is in this thing, then it succeeding is important, because that's everything to you. So that one's really important. I think this one's interesting, and I have been guilty of this. I've been guilty of this. You find yourself critical or envious of people who are in similar roles. You can't celebrate the success of others, especially those like you. I think that one's really interesting. Sorry, what do you think,
Dave? I was going to say, you know, we had Si Rogers on recently, and I was really jealous of him, because he was asked to be the main speaker at a Hillsong's women's conference. Women's conference. And I'm like, why does Si get to be the main speaker at the main Hillsong conference in Sydney? You know, so he's like the women's conference speaker. And then I was like really jealous of him, you know, that he had this opportunity.
Especially because you get like mistaken for a woman at least 50% of the time.
Exactly. And so then I was actually in New Zealand, and then someone set up the speaking thing for me, and I go there, and it's like it's like 10 ladies, and they're kind of strange and everything. And I'm going, what am I doing? You know? And so I gave my talk, and it was really weird, and I'm kind of driving home, and I felt like God said to me, you said you wanted to be like Si, you know?
I love how you take this really serious point of mine and just derail it with your third random story.
No, I was identifying with that jealous thing, you know?
Yeah. No, but yeah. I do think that one is really important. I think it's a symptom that your identity has become locked up in the thing you do, because you can't... You have this, like, the world's mentality, which is that someone else's success is a threat to you, and you can't celebrate when someone who's in a similar role is getting the attention or the success, because that's what makes you valuable. That's what makes you important. And if someone else is thriving or they're getting the attention or whatever, you feel threatened. I mean, that to me is a big one. And then finally, the last one I have, and it's similar, is you aren't preparing your successor. I read this quote in a leadership book, and I think David hates leadership books, but I think it's
I don't hate leadership books.
Do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, I don't.
A good leader is always training his or her replacement. And it's I don't know if that's meant to be taken. I don't know if we need to take that in a literal sense. Maybe we do. I don't know. But the heart of it, at least, is that you're not holding on to your role. You're not being like this bottleneck in your position, you know, where you're making these moves to ensure that nothing ever threatens the position you have, as opposed to just being very investing and mentoring and encouraging other people, new and up and coming people, with a real peace that doesn't threaten you. You know, they're not like someone on the bench that could replace you in the lineup. You know, there's someone that you're investing in, and you just trust God no matter what he wants to do with that. What do you guys think of that?
No, I was just going to say, I think when you have that where you're willing to give away what God has given you to others, then God trusts you with more. You know, he'll give you more. That's what I think.
I think you made this point on one of the first points there, just how you get over-focused on whatever it is that's become that precious thing that defines you. And I think you were putting, there's an interesting point there of how you don't move on then, or you get stuck in a period of your life. And I remember having this conversation with a guy some years ago in Brazil, and he was helping us out with the band that I had at that time. And he was from another band, a successful band. And he was trying to give us tips on how to, you know, get the word out or share our material more and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I was listening to him, and I was trying to think, okay, how can we put this into practice? How can we do this or that? And he's getting really intense about it. Like, you have to do this, and you got to promote more, and you've got to blah, blah, blah. You know how things get with band stuff. And I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. That's just not going to happen. And he was like, why? Don't you care about your band? Aren't you going to, you know, to him, it was like unprofessional. It's like, don't you want to do good? And I was like, well, yeah, but there's just more to my life than that. band, and there's other things that I care about as well. And I was just saying it off the top of my head, but it just made me, as I was saying it, I just kind of realized, that is true, and it's important, and that's I'm so thankful to God that I'm not stuck in a place where what we do and what becomes who we are, and it becomes such an oppressive, like, shackle. It becomes like a heavy thing to carry, where there's so much pressure on, because that's so important. And I feel like that was a bit where that guy was at. So I was just, praying for him afterwards, because I was thinking, man, I feel like that was so important to him. And he didn't quite understand when I was saying there's more to my life than this. There are other aspects to it that God has given me, that like my family, for instance, or the other, so much, the bigger picture of why we do what we do and what we have in him,
I think that's the sad irony, Luke, to your point, is that we end up killing the very thing that God initially was using in our lives and was, was bringing us joy, and to some extent. We end up killing it. It becomes this burden, this shackle, as you described. So what started out as this, God gives us this tool and we're supposed to be at peace and enjoy it and use it and hold on to it lightly, now it becomes this thing we have to have, and we're really, so much pressure, and we're envious of other people, and we block anyone from potentially threatening us, and it just destroys us. And how sad is that? And I guess for me, the ultimate reverberation in all of this is to hear someone like Billy Graham say, I guess I wish I just meditated more on God and spent time with my family. I'm like, that dude never stopped moving. I mean, I can't possibly hope to compete with the amount of events and meetings and rallies and interviews. And I mean, he did everything all the time, constantly. And yet at the end of all of it, he kind of was lamenting that he didn't live a more simple, God-focused life, which sounds crazy given who, we think him to have been. But that's really kind of the ultimate inspiration for me. So David, Chad, what are some, I want to wrap things up here, but if you find yourself listening to this and you've gotten things out of balance, you resonate with some of these things we're saying, what are some simple ways you get back on track? We've touched on a little bit, but maybe conclude us here with some thoughts.
The main step, which I think we've covered a little bit, is just admitting to God and probably to those that you're in ministry with that you're off track, and just starting by saying, God, I'm sorry that I somehow have allowed for this role to define me more than being your child does. And a prayer that I found in Brennan Manning's book, even though he's with Jesus now, it came out last, I guess this year, called The Furious Longing of God. And it's essentially a super simple prayer, which just goes, Abba, I am yours, you are mine, and your desire is for me. And so just asking God to allow us to actually experience his desire and his passion for us way more than we think we have a desire or passion for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always about making sure that you're spending that time seeking God with a desperate heart, not just where you're saying, God, I say this to him pretty much every when I wake up, God, help me to be, make you happy, help me to be a good son, and let what I do come out of this motivation, and also to use the opportunities you've given me in a way that please you, whatever you want me to do. But I think it's always coming back to that, coming back to that relationship all the time, and saying, Lord, let that be I want to know you, and I want this to be the priority. And then everything is going to come from that, and it's, you're going to, those good works you were created for, you're going to experience.
Yeah, the first thing I always say, the way I introduce the revolutionary, the Provoke and Inspire seminar, that we have when we're trying to encourage and challenge Christian artists to revolutionize the world, is first things first. You're a follower of Jesus and then an artist. And I think it's all about getting the foundation right. And that applies to anybody. You're a follower of Jesus before you're an employee, before you're even a husband or a father, before you're a volunteer at your church, before you're any of those things. It's that simple beauty of just being your father's son or daughter, and making that Well, not making it. It is the only source of satisfaction. That's the truth. The truth is that there is no satisfaction outside of that. Not to satisfy the deep longings of your heart. You get that foundation right, and then you can look, like, even hearing you describe your reaction to your friend in Brazil, there's just a lightness, a peace, I don't need that. That's cool. Like, I don't feel like I've got to go down that road. And I think that's how it is. It's you're then able to look at other things in their proper light, in their proper order, because God is who he is. You are who you are because of who he is. You make that the priority. And from there, you just go about your life in a way that you hope to please God. And then when you get off, because we do, you know, it's not about you get that right and you nail it. You have to keep coming back to this, right? You have to keep saying, God, I see it. And God will use these moments like he has in my life to reveal your heart and to say, you know, I love that you're doing this, but Ben, this isn't who you are. And you can trust me. And you can trust me with the season of life you're in. And you can trust me with, if I say completely go in a different direction, it's going to be for your best. You know, I often say to people I'm talking to, we need to have a healthy skepticism about even thinking we know what we really want. You know, not trusting our own instincts so much, because we think we know this is what will make me happy. And often it's not true. Often God has something so much better if we would just trust him and listen to him and have that peace to follow him in that way. So anyhow, boom, that literally landed on the hour mark according to my little timer.
Boom.
I mean, you know what? This started like a train wreck. We were just rolling around, bumping into each other. No, nothing was making sense. Words were flying out like a frozen gazelle in the winter. Yes, David?
Wow.
Chad, okay. Come on. You got something.
No, I got nothing. I got nothing. I wish I had the yawn button right now, because that's what I'd be
doing. Oh, there I said it. Bam. That was a good burn. Good burn, Chad.
I wish I had
That's all I had.
This is bizarro world. We're the ones rambling. Chad's the one pulling it in. What is happening right now? Anyway, we are the Provoke and Inspire podcast, calling followers of Jesus to radical faith in secular culture. If you are inspired by what we say, please share this with others that also similarly might be inspired by what we say, or offended, or both. Either way, we'll take anything we can get. So rate, subscribe, review, send this to your friends, family, foes, and acquaintances alike. It's not too late to come to the revolutionary week. I don't think it's too late, not mathematically.
Revolutionary week.
This happens at the end. When is it, Luke? I don't even know. I'm scrambling.
Yeah, July 27th through till, if you're going to Woodstock, through till the 4th of August.
Yes, steiger.org/rweek for all the details. This will be an amazing week where you can hear great teaching, be together with like-minded people who want to change the world, and then go out and put what you've learned into practice. Register now, steiger.org/rweek. We will talk to you next time. David's got to do a show. I got to pick an apple and throw it at someone, and I don't even know if Luke has anything to do. Chad?
I'm going to eat my apple. So the apple you throw, I'm catching it, eating it. Off to a great day.
All right, talk to you next time. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Provoke and Inspire, the official Come and Live podcast. To hear past podcasts, go to comeandlive.com. Got a question for the guys? Send it in to provokeandinspire@comeandlive.com.